8:05, you're listening to 100.5 FM. Good morning. I'm Ray Richardson. Thanks for joining us. Just be careful as you head out today. If you haven't looked outside, the white stuff is falling. You want to be very careful. Plus, if the new budget was passed here in the state, your ambulance ride would be more expensive by 6%. So just be careful. Just be careful out there. Governor Mills last night gave her State of the Budget address or State of the Union or State of the whatever. I don't know what it was. I did not watch it because I just don't watch these things anymore. I did read the transcript, which, by the way, you can do as well if you want to. It's printed in the Press Herald. One of the things she talked about was the achievement of 55% state funding for education for the first time in Maine history, putting funds directly in the classroom to benefit Maine kids. What she left out of that was in 2004, and I think maybe Chris Till knows this guy who's in the studio, Eric Chinquette. Do you know that name by any chance?
I'm familiar.
Yeah, yeah. So he and I went around and did a bunch of tandem talks around Maine about how we need to bring property taxes down. And so there was this effort called LD1, and it would advance education funding to 55% by the state level. And in exchange for that, 15% would go to property tax relief. We would all get a 15% property tax cut if the state ever met that threshold. That passed in 2004. That was 21 years ago. John Baldacci came up with a scheme, even though it was a state referendum, came up with a scheme to put it in over four budget cycles. It never actually happened. Nobody else really messed with it. And then Janet Mills became committed to it. So we are spending hundreds of millions of dollars more on local education, which I want children to have a proper education. But the people have to be able to pay for it. And the part she left out last night was the 15% property tax relief that would come from that education spending. We did not achieve that. In fact, we've seen nothing but a dramatic rise, even though all that money has gone to
dramatic rise.
And so the only point here is that, as I mentioned to Larry Ellison earlier, if Chris Till is sitting here and he's Larry Ellison and he's looking to invest $500 billion in data centers, does he look at Maine as a place of opportunity? That if they're successful with what they do, will they be punished for that success, or will they be congratulated on it? And I would say right now, if you're Larry Ellison, you wouldn't see Maine as a place to come and put those data centers, even though we could. We do have redundant internet here in some areas. We do have redundant power, which is what they need. Now, we don't have power generation like we ought to, but we do have some of the stuff that they would want infrastructure-wise. What we don't have is a tax structure and the other kind of infrastructure that we would need. So all I know is that I love Maine, and I love the people here that I've met, and they're good people, and they deserve a better government that doesn't give them stuff, but empowers our state's economy so they can see an opportunity and a future here.
Mm. Just falls on the leadership.
Yeah.
Bottom line, you know, and like you, I love this state. It's fantastic. There's opportunity, you know, bringing a guy like Larry Ellison into the play, or anyone like him that's ready to invest in the state of Maine would be fantastic. It creates jobs. You know, what I don't understand is when these towns and county and state people get involved and how they try and stop the development. We've got a state that's the size, 30,500 square miles of land. All right, we're occupying a small percentage of it. But if you want to put a solar field in, fine. No, go ahead. Put it up. All right? What are you laughing about? You got a good one.
This guy Fred says, just wanted to say thank you today, Ray, for recommending Matt Gagne at GAM. It's much easier to listen to him than you being so fired up. I will still listen to your show, but today I can't handle it.
Well, you can't handle the truth. Yeah.
He said, driving in the snow, you're too wound up for me.
So. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, let's
Matt
be wound up.
Hey,
that's
Matt
important.
Gagne
Wake
does
up.
A good job at GAN.
Yeah, I like
Rick
Matt.
And George
yeah.
does a good job up at WVOM. I just think people ought to listen to one of us, because this is the only place you're going to hear something other than everything's rosy.
Yeah, exactly. Conservative talk radio is so important here in the state of Maine. You know, it's our last bastion. You know, it's our first opportunity to really say what's got to be said. You know, whether you believe us or not, it's up to you.
Chris, let me ask you this. As someone who has done a lot for this country, you've served our nation and defended freedom. You fought in Iraq. I remember you telling us on these airwaves years ago that you went door to door as a Navy SEAL. You've come back here. And you've been a prominent businessman. You've owned several really wonderful businesses here in the state. Now you have 7 car washes. If you were governor, what would be your top 3 priorities?
top three priorities are pretty simple. We have to streamline the scope of government. We have to go back to what the true role of government is, which is to empower the people. That would be, like President Trump always says, America first. I think at the state level, if every policy decision that came across the governor's desk was viewed under, is this empowering our citizens to achieve life, liberty, and the pursuit of their own happiness, then that would be something that would be advanced. If it was slowing it down, it would stop.
Right.
Regulation would be number two, especially here in the state of Maine. It's there's too many overlaps. It's just speaking from the, if we're in the real estate hours, either the municipality has to have final say and the state get out of the way. That's really what my motto would
be.
The
overlapping regulations.
Yeah, where you'll get approval from a municipality, but then the state fire marshal will come in and change the whole plan. And what people don't realize is that adds hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to developments in what's called soft cost budget.
Ridiculous.
So engineering, architecture, all that stuff. So that would be number two. Get that at the municipal way. State, get out of the way. State, get out of the way. And then I would say number three would be tying education, because we always talk about education, but no one ever talks about the hard truth of performance. Okay. And I'm not saying teach to a test. That's not, I'm not a George W. Bush fan of that whole process.
No, behind, right?
You know, I'm not a fan of that, because each kid learns at a different pace.
Exactly right.
Okay. But if we're not having drastic improvement in what we're putting out and challenging the kids, if I were governor, I would look to a place like Hillsdale College, where it is apolitical, but it teaches the constitutional values. I believe we got rid of handwriting in the public schools so that people can't read the original text of what their rights are.
Yeah.
So that would be priority one.
Imagine that. That's a really interesting thing.
So those would be my three things.
You can't write.
You talked about teaching to a test. I agree with you. You know, we had Race to the Top. We had No Child Left Behind. We had Common Core. We have all these theories. But at the end of the day, I believe very soon, and I've said this forever, I've said this on the show for 21 years, I've written about it for much longer than that, I believe that we could come up with a standard of measure, getting teachers, getting parents, getting students, smart students, we have a lot of those, administrators, getting them all together in a room, nobody has say over the other. That would have to be really important, because if the school has say over everything, you could come up with a standard of measure that does what you've talked about, recognizing that children are all different. They're unique and precious creations of God, and they learn things differently. I mean, Jesus in the Bible taught in parables. Why did he do that? Because you come to understand what he was teaching differently. That's why he taught in parables. There's the best example of all, that people learn things and understand things in a different way. But all we ever hear is you're going to penalize teachers. Let me tell you, I had three of the most powerful people in my life. My parents were the most powerful, but three of the most powerful people in my life were Mrs. Clendenin, Mr. Soto, and Mrs. Butler. Mrs. Clendenin opened my eyes to Shakespeare, which I've had a 45-year love with, and I still love Shakespeare and read it. Mrs. Butler opened me up to the ideas of the rest of the world, the Colosseum, the Parthenon. She traveled extensively in the summer. She would bring back these amazing slideshows back in 1980, which was old technology, and show us these things. And Mr. Soto taught me how to make a cogent argument. He let me argue with him in civics class, but he demanded that the argument be cogent, and if it wasn't, I couldn't argue with him. And it's a skill set that I use to this day. They are three of the most powerful influences in my life, and in Mr. Soto's case, I use these skill sets 45 years later that he instilled in me. And so I love teachers, but we have to have accountability. And we don't have it.
100% Ray. And I think we always look back at our teachers that had those positive effects. I'll say this. Mrs. Gamala, my third grade teacher, that sat me down with my mother and said, I was so far behind reading. She saw no future for me in education.
I heard that a lot.
And if I go along this way, I'm destitute only to work at the Ford seatbelt factory. That was a wake-up call, and I was in the third grade, and I still remember it. Truth matters, right? Sure. The world's not unicorns and rainbows as much as we want to try to make it out to be for our kids. You got to be honest with kids and challenge children. Children want discipline, they want structure, and they want to be challenged. Because then when they see, you know, going back to my military background, once you see what your body can withstand, you want to push it to the next level. So if we're honest with kids at a young age, they're going to not only reach what we're trying to get them as a minimum, they're going to go to the maximum.
Right, of course they are. Mm. Of course they are. And you talked about structure. What are boundaries for children? Boundaries are actually someone telling you that they love you and they care about you, which is why they set boundaries for your life, because you're not ready to deal with those consequences yet. So children crave boundaries as much as we say they don't. Now, they do try to push the boundaries. There's no doubt about it. That's also their job. Of course, that's their job. But those boundaries tell the children that they are cared for and loved and supported. Mm-hmm. That's why they have the boundaries. Somebody cares enough to them to say, here are the limits of what you're allowed to do. And then the kids turn around and they fight those boundaries. We have that same tension right now in our government. The executive branch throughout the long history of this country have sought to extend the boundaries and the powers of the executive branch, and the Congress and the judicial branch tries to rein them back in. This is how the world works. We have boundaries and we push boundaries.
When I went to school back in the Stone Age, we had tracks 1, 2, and 3. Yeah, we talked about, you know, George W. Bush, one size fits all, teach to the test. We had people learn at different levels. I was on track 1, which was the smartest ones, and then you had the track 2, which they learned at a different pace, and the track 3, where all my buddies were, right? They just wanted to have fun, but they learned at a much, much slower pace. Now what they try and do is put everybody in the same box, and then the track 1 people, or, you know, people who should be in track 1, and, you know, they get distracted, you know, they're on. They learn it the first time that they hear it, and the people in track 2 would have to hear it twice. Track 2, you got to hear it 3-4 times. But what's wrong with doing that and teaching people at the pace at which they're able to learn? Otherwise, you end up, you know, distracting the other people from, you know, accelerating. And so, and it's not a one-size-fits-all education. I have 6 kids. I know what it's like. All my kids are different. They all learn different. They are all different people. But I know that when I was in those classes, I was learning, and I was learning at the pace that I was ready, because I didn't want to wait. You know, it's like I didn't want to get bored. And so, you know, education's a funny thing. And I think what's happened here in the state of Maine and throughout our country is that parents are no longer involved, and they ceded that responsibility over to the teachers and the Board of Education, and they think they can do a better job than their parents. The parents know their children. They have to be involved. Where was the PTA when all these people were being children were being given suppressive bras to, you know, change sex and be encouraged to, you know, be something else other than what they are?
Well, part
where
of the
were
problem,
they?
David, is that parents have been discouraged from being involved, and often they're afraid.
Well, because, they've been intimidated to a point where they don't want to be involved.
I've gone to school board meetings. I don't go to them now very often, but I've gone to school board meetings before. Mm. And
so
got up and spoke against the budget. For example, they were taking school resource officer out of the budget. Yeah. I thought that was dangerous as the world was getting more dangerous.
Sure.
You had people in the audience sitting there hissing at me like they were snakes.
I can identify.
And I looked over. Yeah. I didn't say anything, but I looked over at them and... It was just all the school people, you know, a resource officer out of the school and the crazy world
no
in which
parents.
We're in. But, you know, one of the reasons charter schools have been so effective in this country is the parents are intimately involved in charter schools.
Yeah. And I'm an advocate for charter schools.
With the curriculum. Yeah. And education is the great economic equalizer in this country. No matter your origins, if you have a good education, you have an opportunity.
Yeah.
No, I don't know why we don't look at it that way.
Absolutely, and that's coming from a kid that was born and raised in a town just under 1,000 in Michigan, rural Michigan farming community.
Yeah.
Our textbooks in high school had the names lined out, and I could go back to my older cousin who graduated from the high school in 1978, and I was in high school in 1993, and there was Terry Till's name, so I had the same book that had been used. So it's not the best bells and whistles. It's about having structure, discipline, and accountability.
And a nuclear family.
David, to your point of parents, right? And this isn't an excuse for parents.
Yeah.
But today's parents are stressed in different ways than previous generations were because of the cost of living. So if it is even a nuclear family, you have both parents, working.
And you end up with latchkey kids.
And then, right. And then the shuttle and the constant hustle and everything else. So it's, and that's not an excuse for parents today.
Yeah, it's not an excuse.
We still have to be.
You chose your path.
Yeah, right. Life's hard.
Yeah.
Life's hard.
I get it every day on the text line. But, people tell me.
But it is a different world, so.
Yeah. I know
it's different.
My spouse goes to work, and we can't make ends meet. Mm-hmm. You know, part of the problem we face here is we don't look at the economy as a moral issue. The economy is a moral issue. If a man and woman get up every day and go to work and do the right thing.
And still are struggling.
They should be able to pay their bills and have a little bit left over to enjoy life with.
Exactly right.
That's called economic freedom. When you have disposable money, you have economic freedom to do the things that are fun instead of the things that you have to do just to survive. Mm. People like our current governor and other people in the government around the country don't look at it as economic freedom. They believe your disposable income should go to the government so they can spend it better than you. I don't believe in that.
I don't believe in it.
This country was founded on the concept of individual freedom.
Yeah.
That was what the founders talked about.
Look, remember the Boston Tea Party, right?
I have read everything I can possibly read. I have a 4,100 volumes in my personal library on all of this stuff from the beginning. They did not want what we have.
Freedom, and there's another part to that, though. There's a responsibility of the individual.
Freedom, you can't have freedom without responsibility.
Correct. And that, you gave me three things I would do as governor. Here's the fourth I would do. Any state tax that has to be paid out of your payroll, no longer paid for by the employer. You as the individual has to cut a check once a month to the great state of Maine. Because you know what you're going to do after time? You're going to start voting a little different.
Amen.
When you ask,
it's so true.
When you ask, whoa, where's this going? So I would make that change immediately.
Chris, I talk about this all
getting
the time.
Getting people involved.
It's a twofold process. Number one, because you don't see it, you don't recognize it. That's number one. Number two, with the 13th Amendment, we abolish slave labor, and yet employers must be the tax collector for the government, and they don't get compensated for it.
Well, and also provide the match that,
that
evens the playing field. So,
absolutely.
And I have no problem as an employer still paying that tax, but only have me pay the portion I'm responsible for, not for the employee. Let the employee write that check
because it's invisible to them.
Exactly.
And the government wants it that way. They don't want the people to see what it's actually costing.
And we talked about Larry Ellison. Hey, I'm fine with tech even, but just make sure it's a button push on their mobile device or on their desktop at their house that says, I am now zapping $700 this month to the state of Maine. And what the heck am I getting for it?
Well, what you're boiling, and this is why I've been coming in here for as long as I have and doing the show with Ray, and Ray's been here for 21 years now, and, you know, trying to wake people up out there because they don't vote. So many people don't vote and they don't get involved, and I understand you're struggling. You gotta pay the bills, you gotta work, but you've gotta pay attention to the people that you're voting for, and if you don't know what that person stands for, don't vote for them because you think they're good looking or they might be a friend of a friend. Find out what they stand for. Find out what they want to do. And there's a lack of information. And I will say it. In the local school boards, you never know what the hell these people are that you're voting for. And it's like a club of people that get together and they all decide, well, we're going to elect Chris Till. He's a good guy. We love him. He's a Navy SEAL.
He is a good guy.
Right. But, what does Chris stand for? What does David Jones stand for? What does Ray Richardson stand for? What do we believe in? What do we want to see? What's our vision for the future? Ask the questions. And if they're not willing to answer them, or they don't expose themselves enough to answer them, you don't want to pull the lever for these votes. You just don't want to do it. And so, we come in here, we tell people get their ass off the couch and go vote. We do everything we can, trying to get them to go out and participate. And, I think a few people have participated as a result of us yelling and screaming at them and calling them whatever, demeaning words we decide to do that might motivate them to get up off the couch. But the bottom line is that's what it's all about.
Part of it is we also need a media that isn't complicit and a propaganda agent for the government. Another guy Chris, you know him quite well. His name is Kenny Chinquet. He ran for the state Senate. Yeah. And his opponent, provably, beyond a shadow of a doubt, lied about him. And the Press Herald actually did a little thing and never even mentioned it. Kenny, I don't even agree. Kenny's one of my dearest friends. I don't even agree with him on this issue. He said here and anywhere else, I believe in a woman's right to choose under the law. He was very clear about that, And yet his opponent and all the people that poured money into his campaign lied about it and said Kenny was going to take away the right to abortion. I have had women say to me, I thought Kenny was going to stop my right to choose, so I didn't vote for him. And I said, if you had known that he wouldn't, would you have voted for him? Yes, I would have.
Yeah,
the current
think
guy
about
is
that.
Silent.
Yeah.
So there's another piece here.
Accountability.
The media is not supposed to be the propaganda agent for the government.
They are.
Founders, George Mason in particular, and Thomas Jefferson, who fought with the media like Trump does. Mm. It's just a different era. But he fought with the media, maybe even worse than Trump. Thomas Jefferson believed the media was a necessary entity for the country to work.
But see, Ray, that's an easy solution, too. It's a super easy solution. It's all under the guise of the main education, or I'm sorry, the main election laws, right? Where you as a candidate can't coordinate with a PAC,
right?
But there's always this third party guy that can talk to everybody.
Mm. Right.
You know how you end it? Any advertisement in any state or local race has to be stamped by the candidate.
I agree.
So that's not saying that David has a PAC that's supporting Ray Richardson and you coordinated that with. All it is before he goes live with any advertisement, it has to be stamped by you.
Hmm.
Because what does that do? It puts accountability on the individual that we're voting on.
That's the word, accountability. I mean, they can say or do any damn thing.
It's an easy
want.
Fix.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, how hard is that? It's not. You're not colluding with David, who's running a PAC supporting you. You just have to approve the stuff he's putting out. It happened in my race in the positive. There was a PAC when I ran in 2012 that ran ads that didn't have my military record correct. I went on record with the Press Herald at the time with Bill Nimitz to say, this is why PACs are bad. This is why candidates need to be able to talk to said PACs because things get messed up.
Right.
Both on the positive and the negative.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I agree. But if we do that.
But that's what it was. It wasn't Tim. That wasn't Tim lying about Kenny. It was, you know, it was the
media.
The Democratic Party of Maine that well, outspend.
I did get a thing from Tim in the mail because I'm his constituent.
Yeah.
I didn't know that prior to Kenny running, by the way, because he's never said a word.
You've never had any
interaction.
The thing is, if there was something against, you know, if somebody put something out against your candidate that you disagreed with, wouldn't you say something?
Oh, yeah, that's, I mean, number one, a liable mission, still a lie.
Character
I've made it clear, if I run and somebody comes out and says something against the opponent that I don't agree with in my name, I will denounce him. I'll hold a press conference and denounce him.
Is this breaking news, Ray? Are you declaring to run for governor?
No, I'm not declaring, but it is, it is one of the principles that I have decided. Yeah. I'm not going to let that happen. We had this happen in my hometown with a woman by the name of Carolyn Gilman. You may know her.
Oh, yeah.
Carolyn was our state senator, and we had worked really hard to win that race. And a PAC came in, outside PAC came in, and said, Bill O'Gara, who's a wonderful guy, just don't agree with him on politics. Bill O'Gara doesn't care about you, doesn't care about Westbrook. Well, that's a damnable lie. Bill O'Gara bled Westbrook. We just didn't agree on everything. So I went public. I called into all the radio stations I could. I went to the Press Herald. I went on TV. And I said, we have nothing to do with this. Mm. Bill O'Gara is a fine guy. We just disagree with him on politics. And we want the PAC to stop. And the PAC stopped.
Yeah.
But that's what you have to do. And you shouldn't have to. Your point is a good one.
Yep. And it's an easy fix. It's really an easy fix.
Well, you know, the thing is, a lot of these things that can be fixed are easy fixes, but nobody wants to do it.
We
can't get it done.
Unfortunately,
but there's
guys,
a guy.
Are you guys hanging around?
Because
we got
to. I got to get going.
You got to go.
Yeah, we got to hold up.
It was really great to have you in. I hope you'll come back again. It's a good conversation.
No, I love it, Ray.
It's been a while.
Love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring that good-looking woman in, too. She's very good at picking horses.
Yeah, she is.
She really is.
Oh, yeah.
It is 8:30. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Yeah. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds